Welcome to Cooper Talk. I'm your host, Steve Cooper. And remember, I'm only as hip as my guest. And I know you're usually used to the bump, 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 the sound of song. But for some reason, the iTunes isn't working. That's how we play all our music. The iTunes isn't working on the computer. Luckily, I do an all talk show. And I got to say, the guest I'm only as hip as today is a very funny comic, which we're going to talk about it later. You tell one of my favorite one-liners ever. And okay. I remember seeing it years ago. I'll let you say it, but it was one joke that has always stuck with me, and it's so funny. I remember seeing you. Our guest is John Mendoza, a very funny guy. He's played all over. You've been on The Tonight Show, you've been on Letterman, you've been on them all, right?
Been on them all. I was on one of the last five comics. I was on Carson.
Oh, you were on Carson.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
Now, was that your first time on it, or?
No. I did Carson maybe about 20 times.
Did you? So you were up to getting couch, right?
Yeah.
People, you know, I always read about my guests. Which, first of all, just so you know, people, I'm going to give a little plug for this weekend, Saturday night. It's my birthday show. My birthday is on Sunday, which is the night before Halloween, which isn't bad having a birthday before a holiday. Because, I mean, Halloween's fun. But I remember my ex-wife's birthday was the day after Christmas. And it always sucked because I could buy her presents, but she still wasn't happy. She needed more presents for her birthday. And then she would sit there and she'd always want extra wrapping paper. And I was like, you know what? I just bought a shitload of wrapping paper for Christmas. I wanted to turn it inside out and draw pictures on it, but that would piss her off. So that's why she's my ex-wife, people. But come out this Saturday, 9:30. It's my birthday show at Flappers in the Yoo-Hoo Room. Say Cooper Talk or wear a costume, you're getting free. Just wanted to give that plug. But anyway, back to you, John. So, I just have to do that. So you're from
Happy
New
birthday.
York? Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Are you originally from New York?
Yeah.
Now, did you start out comedy in New York? Or
I started out at the Improv and Catch a Rising Star in New York.
Okay.
When I started, it was actually kind of funny because it was the late 70s.
Okay.
And everyone that you know was starting, and Seinfeld and George Wallace and Larry Miller and all those guys that started before me, and they were getting all the stage time and Provenza. So we had no place to go. There was a guy named Kent Casper.
I know Kent. He was a lawyer.
I think he still is somewhat of a lawyer.
That's right. Yeah. I looked him up on Facebook. Mm-hmm. He didn't answer my friend. I was going to ask him to get on the show because I remember he was the filthiest act. He would go on stage with that toupee.
Yes.
At least this is years later.
Yeah.
He would go on the stage with that toupee and take it off. And so he got you on stage, or?
Well, no. I went to comedy clubs and stuff like that, and you go, you audition, you get on and stuff like that, and I finally passed at the Improv.
Okay.
And I get on at the Improv, but you couldn't get on. From the day I passed, it was a year later, it was the first time I actually got, the next time I got on stage at the
Improv.
Really?
So wait, so you passed, so you would go on and you would pass, and then
you would hang out every single night, and you would stand there, and you would wait and wait and wait, and once you saw that Gilbert Godfrey was going on, you knew you was fucked.
It was
just forget about it, because now Gilbert's on, and the room is just going to be totally destroyed. So they would put a new act on first, and it was like Fred Stoller would get up, or this guy, Jimmy Charles, and it was several comics like that, and then you would hang out and wait and wait. So I used to drive a cab, so I would come there, and I'd drive a cab, and I'd hang out, and then at nighttime, I would take the people as they were coming out, and I would drive them all over the place.
That's perfect.
Oh, it worked out great for me. But in between, you'd be sitting there. So one night, Ken Casper said, hey, there's a Baskin-Robbins on 75th Street. Do you want to go and work in front of there? So we would stand in front of the Baskin-Robbins when people were getting their ice cream on Columbus Avenue and stand out in the middle of the street and do stand-up.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And you'd have to time it. There'd be like a garbage truck coming by or a bus coming by. And I swear, the only reason people gave us, maybe we put a hat out and stuff like that, a little box, whatever the hell it was, and people would come by, and it was a pity fuck. It literally was. People would throw money in there like, go get a job. Go do something besides this.
That's funny. But, you know, it's just weird. It's like, I know I had a comic on who's working on. I know who's he started out. He didn't know what he had never done comedy. He had done like his school shows. He was like 18.
Mm-hmm.
He used to go down to the to Venice Beach and the promenade and just sit there with a mic. And he said it was just hilarious because, you know, he'd be telling jokes as people are just walking by. At least ice cream, you have a captive audience. They're in line getting ice cream. But for this, it's just like, how you doing? There you go.
Yeah. But it was so freaking pathetic.
So you're doing the, you're playing the Baskin Robbins. Next thing you know, he's playing the Haagen-Dazs. There wasn't many ice cream chances. You couldn't do the ice cream circuit.
Yeah.
but if now you could do Gladstones.
Yeah.
You
can, there was a place across the street from Studio 54, and it was a small little dump place, and it was an English pub, and they had you would stand like where you are, and to your right, just about a foot and a half, 2 feet, there was a dartboard, and the stage was there.
Really?
I swear to you. And you would stand there and you would tell the jokes, and they would play darts right past your head. And the drunker they got, as you saw the eyes start to cross, you started to get nervous and go, oh, shit, I got to get there early so I can get on early. Because once they get really drunk, you're really screwed.
You talk to people about this, and I don't know, you've probably played. There used to be a show called Betty's, Betty's Fireside. You remember that?
No.
It was in North Jersey, and it was booked. It was this, basically, you knew when you were going to go up there that you were just going to eat it.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
These hecklers were not only hecklers, they were good hecklers.
Oh, so
they would be
good?
Like if you use the stock comeback, like, oh, shut up, we heard that last week, you suck. Mm-hmm. And you were in like this cage. Mm-hmm. And the only reason people did it was because it was a two-act show. So as an opener, you know, you could make $150 on a Tuesday night for doing 20 minutes, which actually, and if you didn't do your 20 minutes, they wouldn't get pissed at you because it was just hell.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's weird. But you must have had to play some really, weird places in the beginning.
Oh, there were places that you'd stand in between the men's room. I remember somewhere in New York, there was a place we worked, and you stood in between the men's room and the ladies' room. And you were literally the filler. It was a Japanese restaurant, and it was like a Benihana's type place. And you sat and you stood there in the middle of the room, and you were the filler while they were waiting for people to get into the main dining room.
God, that's just so.
Oh yeah.
Where else? Like it's funny because I love, because especially the comics from New York, like Lou DiMaggio. You probably know Lou.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
He told a story about it was this big, and he wished he had took the pictures of the banner, and it was playing like in a bowling alley. And but looking out the window, you could hear the pins. I mean, what is probably your most hellacious gig? I mean, what is just something you sit there and go, that you actually look back and go, man, I'm glad I did that, but at the time it sucked?
I think on a Super Bowl Sunday, and people were plowed drunk, and it was a $50. There was a guy named Jerry Stanley that used to book all these little gigs.
I remember the name.
Yeah, he booked all these little gigs, $50 gigs and stuff like that. And you would go out there, if you think last week was bad, the new one that you were doing this week was even freaking worse.
Oh, wow.
And it just became worse, and you just wanted to get better so you didn't have to go to those freaking things anymore. And then I remember, at those times in your life, you were basically working for electricity bill.
Right.
You know, I hope I get a gig this week, because if I don't, I can't pay my phone bill or whatever.
Right, like you get that last-minute cancellation, you're like, oh, crap, there goes rent. I gotta, and you're, you know, back then it's not now, you can send emails, then you have to get on the phone and like leave 87 messages.
We worked at Atlantic City, and it was like they canceled the first show. And I had calculated that I needed that, you know, $150 for the night. It was $50 a show. And they canceled the first show. I was like, but it's not our fault the audience didn't show up.
Right, right, right.
And we said, well, we're not going to do the next two shows. And this one scumbag did. He said to the club owners, I'll do the two shows by myself. It was like, fuck you.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've never forgotten that guy, and I've never forgiven him. What a, God,
that's,
a magician.
That's, oh, great. Don't say his name, but I want to know. We'll say it off air.
Yeah.
So you're working all these crap gigs.
Mm-hmm.
And then
the good gigs weren't even much better.
Yeah, exactly. But now, did you work for, was Rick Morgan booking when you were around?
No.
He did like McGuire's in Medford, New York, and all these plays. He was like, there was a guy in Philly named Paul Solari. He was like the Solari of Long Island. It was like, yeah, you come in, I'll give you this. I'll give you, okay, yeah, I'll give you $70. I'll give you $25 now. I'll mail you a money order in a week. And in 2 weeks, I'll give you the $25 on a check. And as a comic, you took it because you're like, you just wanted to get the cash.
Yeah. I remember there was a guy in Ohio someplace, and he used to, and then they went down to Florida, and he would pay you in Coke, and he would give you Coke, and I didn't do Coke. I loved pot, but I didn't do Coke. And he go, oh, here's a couple of grams, you can sell that. And it was like, no, I want cash.
Exactly. I don't want to be a dealer for not dealing nothing. Yeah, I'm not taking the fall and going to jail for just doing damn comedy.
Yeah, and it would tell you where to go. Go down the block over there, and they'll buy it off of you, you know. I was like, no, I give me my freaking cash.
Oh, man. So after like a year, you said, you know, you started. Then you started getting spots in the improv in those places, or you'd already passed at the improv.
Now, I passed at the improv, and one night I was standing there waiting to go to the bathroom, and it was a guy named Chris Ulbrich. And Chris Ulbrich wound up running HBO for a long time, but prior to that, he was one of the owners of the improv. And one night I was going to the bathroom, he walked up to me, and I was online, and he says to me, you waiting for the bathroom, boy? And that military thing in my head went off, and it was like, boy, fuck you, boy.
Right.
And I walked in the bathroom, I came out, and this other guy that ran the place, Howard Klein, he said to me, he said, you just called the owner of the place boy. And I went, he said, now he wants to see you. So I went over to him, I said, what do you want? And he said, you know, he said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to call you boy, I apologize. And he says, would you like to work here? You'll get on stage faster. So it was a Saturday night, and Joe Piscopo was emceeing, and Piscopo had a sore throat. And he said to me, you want to go on? I said, yeah, sure. So I went on. That was the first time I got to go on stage after like a year of not working.
See that? Then you started working out there. Which book, for you, it must have been a little odd, emceeing, because you're a lot of one-liners, very... People have to think. I mean, it's not like, you know, you think MCs are like the high energy, and I can see Piscopo emceeing. What was it like for you to MC? Was it a little bit tough just because?
I was horrible. I was terrible at it. I was really, really, really terrible at it. I mean, I would go, I remember one night, there was Robert Klein. It was like the 1982 Democratic Convention. He was supposed to come on, and he didn't come up. And his entire audience came to the improv to see Robert Klein, and they hated me. It was like, where the fuck is Robert Klein? It's like my fault he's not here.
Exactly.
And they just kept going, and it would bring up like the best actor. It was like Mac and Jamie came on, and they went to the toilet. Gilbert came up, went to the toilet. All these, they hate him. And finally, like midnight, this Robert Klein shows up. So I introduce him, and the audience goes, "Yeah, about time." And I just looked at him and went, "Fuck you, you deal with them." But I was horrible. I was a horrible, horrible MC.
See, emceeing's weird. It's funny because like now, like when I do certain shows, I don't mind hosting because you've been in the business, you know how to work it. If you produce your own show, like I used to do this Cooper's Angels show, but it's all females comics, and I thought Cooper's Angels, perfect T-shirt until Sherwood, whatever his name is, spelling. Thank God he's dead because he would sit there and sue me and go, cease and desist. And I actually stole the Charlie's Angels logo and had Cooper's Angels on the thing. But it's my show, so I know how to do it as a tempo. But it's funny because MCs, I was talking about this with another act. It's they always put the new act up to MC when a lot of times the new act doesn't really know what the hell they're doing.
No.
And then they sit there and they go up. And then so the whole show goes from, especially out like in New York and here, there's a lot of acts. It's not like back east, okay, the MC does 15 minutes, 30 minutes, headliner 45. So then the show, the guy just comes up, and once the guy doesn't get laughs, he's gun shy because he's usually new. Oh. So in between acts, he's just like, okay, I'm not going to do any time. This next act is this, or okay, So you're working out of the improv.
Right.
And then you're starting to do all those clubs.
And then you go on the road, and you talk about bad gigs, and I was just thinking about you would work these strip clubs in the South.
Okay.
You literally take Amtrak from place to place, or you take, Greyhound bus or whatever it was, and you would work these strip clubs, and they would have chicken wire on the stage there, and they would throw the chicken wire. You come in, you see the guy on Wednesday adjusting the chicken wire. And then by Saturday, they throw so many bottles at this spot. Now it was a big freaking hole, so you get hit with beer bottles and the smell of beer all over you and everything. It was horrible.
It's so funny. I mean, and now it's like people complain, oh, I need to go to a bar and do 7 minutes. It's like, no, because especially because your generation before me, you guys have like the war. I mean, I got lucky where it was like clubs were actually developing and they got a good following on the road. But I've heard, the stories you guys have, it was, someone was saying, I think it was Cesario was saying that they went to like some place in Canada and there's only like 12 people and they spoke like broken French English and they're just sitting there and they have no idea what you're saying and you're just up there going, God, thank God I'm getting paid for it.
Oh, I went over to London to go do Saturday Night Live over there and they take you to this large theater and I was with my girlfriend and I said, the act in front of me was doing pratfalls to South Pacific. And it's like, are you kidding me? I'm going home. And the audience is screaming and yelling. And there was no freaking way I was going to do it. So I said to him, I'm giving the money back. I'm going home. Screw this. I'm not going to do it. He said, no, don't worry about it. Just go out there and do your act. So I did my act. And it was like a titter, a no laugh, nothing. And finally I went, okay, I'm going to do my A stuff. So I pull out this one joke. And at the time the joke was... you know what fear is? Fear is when you're stuck in your car in heavy traffic and realize you just had two cups of coffee and a bran muffin.
Right.
And from the back of the room, a guy yells out, what's a bran muffin?
And you're like...
So I said, okay, different rules now. I'm going to tell a joke, and you raise your hand if you don't get it. So I did an hour, and I had so much freaking fun. But it was but that's after so many years of learning.
Right.
This doesn't work. How do I adjust it? I mean, Sunday night was at Balboa Theater in San Diego, and for the first time in many, many years, just as close to going in the toilet as humanly possible. And I could have given it up, but I found a couple of people in the audience, and I found a way to get around it, and I got through that half hour. But, oh.
Now, what was your transition? I mean, okay, from the hell gigs to all that. Now, you were, I mean, as I said, I saw you. I don't know when I first saw you. I saw you on the Tonight Show, and I saw you, but I'm trying to think. I don't know. Did you do improv? Even at the improv, did you do all those things?
And I did. I was a whore.
Comedy. Not comedy. MTV's half hour comedy hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you ever do HBO?
I did the 10th annual Young Comedian Special.
That's okay. That's what I saw. Because my favorite joke was your joke is about. I'm not going to say it. It was about.
Go ahead. No.
No. I can't remember quickly, but I remember you said, "Yeah, if the." I have a fat friend. You can pinch an inch on his forehead.
Oh.
But no, my favorite joke was when you go. If the world ends, I want to hang out with him because he'll be able to find the food.
Oh.
That is one of my that is stuck. That is one of my favorite jokes ever. I don't know if I said it right, but I just remember watching that, and I was just dying because when I started.
That's funny. I got to add that. I forgot all about that.
Yeah, he'll know where the food is. And I was, it's funny. When I started out, I did more one-liner stuff because you're finding yourself.
Sure.
And then I have much more energy on stage and I rant and rave, but it sucks because I have I write some very stupid one-liners that I would love to use on stage, but then people are like,
"Don't we all?"
Really? I mean, you sit there. Yeah, sometimes it's like I post them on Facebook. I just put them up great movie. It'd be if Steve Buscemi joined the Star Wars Falcon Millennium?
Uh-huh.
Boardwalk Empire Strikes Back. See, that's some stupid crap. Like, I like stupid crap like that, but you can't work that on stage. You know, but
what are your great Steve Buscemi's story? Steve and I started, we passed together at the improv.
Oh, Steve, I didn't know Buscemi was a stand-up.
Oh, yeah. So he did stand-up, and like me, didn't get a whole lot of stage time and stuff like that, and came on. And then this woman, Silver Friedman, who owned the improv here,
right?
She came to New York and she got rid of everybody that she didn't like, that Chris Albrecht passed and stuff like that. And she said to Steve Buscemi, she said, and she would tell you, "You suck, you're not funny, go someplace else, go do whatever you want to do in life, but this is not going to work for you. I don't want you in my place, go someplace else." And Steve was the guy in front of me, and she came to me also, said, "You're not funny, get out of here," and blah, blah, blah. But I was looked at it, and I went, "I got no place to go. So I'm going to come here every single night, whether you like me or not,
right.
You put me on or not, I'm still going to come here." And time wore off, and I got stage time there. But Steve left, and he became a fireman in New York City.
Wow.
His family was a fireman. He also became I think his family also ran a construction, a moving company.
Okay.
And I don't see him for years. And all of a sudden, one day I go, Reservoir Dogs. And boom, there he is. And I went, "How cool is that?"
That is funny. You know, it makes sense he's a comic because, one, well, he always ends up in Sandler's movies. So he had to have a connection like that.
Yeah.
But then you probably know Steve Middleman.
Sure, very well.
Middleman was telling me a story. He was on a few weeks ago, and he said it was weird because he was walking down the street in New York, and Steve Buscemi comes and goes, "Hey," and he's already known. He goes, "Hey, I'm a big fan of yours." And Middleman's like, "Well, it shouldn't be the other way around." Mm-hmm. But probably it's like that. I mean, I guess when comics... You know, if you start, they always follow comedy. I heard the guy, John Hamm from Mad Men.
Uh-huh.
I heard the guy, Jimmy Pardo, was on the show. And Jimmy said, I guess when Largo started, John Hamm used to always go to the shows.
Mm-hmm.
And before he became famous, he's just this really, really, really cool guy that loved comedy.
Yeah.
And now that he's a big star and all that, Pardo said he's actually still just a really, really cool guy
who
loves comedy.
Yeah.
So I think it happens sometimes. These guys start following.
Kevin Spacey was a comic also?
I never knew. I've seen him do he used to do a lot of impressions.
A lot of impressions,
And it's so who's, you said, now you were a little after Seinfeld?
About a year or two after Seinfeld.
So who are your guys? Like we all had comics. I hung out with, Keith Robinson and some other people. Who's your clan of guys you just shoot the crap with, if you sat around?
God, I was high back then. There was a guy named John Heyman, Keenan Wayans, Fred Stoller, a lot of guys like that. Back then, what you did was once you got into the rhythm, you would do 10 spots a night. You would go to the improv and do a spot, and then you'd run down to the Comedy Cellar and you'd do a spot, and then you'd run over to the Catch a Rising Star. And Eddie Murphy was hanging out at the same time.
He was a strip, but he's out of the strip pretty much, right?
Originally, when he came into New York, yes, but he worked the improv. He came into the improv for a brief period of time, and he didn't get any stage time there. And then he went to the strip. And that's how he got his lawyer. They wound up representing him because of the lawsuit. he got Saturday Night Live, and when he got to Saturday Night Live, there was a guy, I forget the guy's name, General something or other, some dumb shit. And when he was like 15 years old, Eddie signed a contract with this guy.
Okay.
And he, the only lawyer he knew in the world was a guy named Bob Wax. Bob Wax was one of the owners of the comic strip.
Okay.
So he walked in there one day, he said, I don't know what to do. I got this guy suing me. I got paperwork and stuff like that. I got to give him a salary. And Bob Wax and Richie Tinkin, who ran the place, said, okay, give us the paperwork. We'll look at it, blah, blah, blah. And they went and they bought the guy out for, you know, like whatever they bought him out for. And Eddie said, well, if you get me out of this, you can be my manager or something like that. And that's how they wound up managing it.
Wow. Managing Eddie. Isn't that crazy? It's so funny how like, things happen. It's like I heard the comic strip. I heard when Chris Rock, I don't know, you were in New York scene, so you might know this. But I had heard that, you know, Eddie Murphy, after he's big, he came back and he was bitching because there's no black comics. And I heard Chris Rock went on. Chris Rock was newer, and he wasn't real. He did okay, but I said he went on that night. Everyone says he had like, it'd be like a rookie coming into the World Series with the bases loaded and knocking it out of the park. I heard he just ripped it up, and right there, Murphy put him in like Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know about that. But you would see, I mean, I'm trying to think black comics, and it was Keenan was around. That was about it. And then I remember Damon came out, and Damon walked on stage one night, and he panicked, and he looked at the, and he went, how come faggots wear leather? Nothing. And he ran out the door. Not to be seen for like another year and a half.
I thought they were LA
like
guys. They were New York guys.
No, they were all New York guys. Yeah,
I didn't know that.
They grew up in the city, actually a couple blocks on from the Improv in New York. Keenan grew up there. And what happened, there was a guy named Chris Albrecht who, like I keep saying, he was sort of like the center of the whole thing.
Okay.
He left and he went off to LA and he came out to ICM and he brought all of these guys out here with him and stuff like that. But you talk about weird things, moments like that. I was going up to do my first Letterman and the guy that ran Catch a Rising Star said, hey, can I come with
Lewis?
You?
No. Do you remember Lewis Ferranda?
I know, yeah, very well.
Lucian Hull. Lucian Hull was the comic strip.
He was the comic strip, yeah. He died young, really sad too.
Lucian Hull died?
Yeah. Some kind of weird, freaky disease or something.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, wow, that's crazy.
But this guy, Richard Fields, who was one of the owners of the place, kind of brought the place down a little bit. But he, as we were going up in the elevator, I had no representation or anything like that. And he goes to me, he says, do you have a manager, an agent? Any? How'd you get this? I said, oh, the club. Bob Morton saw me. He said, would you like me to manage you? And I went, yeah, sure. Why not?
I
was green, stupid. I didn't know what was going on. I said, okay. And I finished doing my spot. And Letterman's manager comes over to me when it's over. He says, hey, can I manage you? And I was like, I just shook hands with that guy over there.
How long were you doing it before you got your first Letterman?
Let's see. Four years, maybe.
Okay, so you were learning. But, I mean, yes, because in the New York Cirque Club, people just came out and saw, like, Morton probably go out a lot and see you guys.
Yeah, but see, what I did was I always avoided him because I would see him come in and I wasn't ready.
Okay.
So I avoided him. The way I got my first Tonight Show spot also was they Catch a Rising Star. They were going to have a whole bunch of people audition for him. And Jim McCauley was the guy's name. And McCauley came in on a Friday night to do it, and I was dating this girl who lives across the street, and we had this big fight. And so I went over to Catch a Rising Star to go have a drink, just get out of there.
Right.
So I'm hanging out there, and it's a rainy Friday night, and no cars, no comics are there. And a guy named Bill Sheff was running the place. And he said to me, John, I need you to go on stage and kill time. So go up there and kill time. I said, okay, fine. So I went and did a set. I finished doing a set, and I come off, and Jim McCauley goes to me. He says, would you like to do The Tonight Show, next Thursday night, which was Thanksgiving, which was always the signature breakout spot for a comic.
Okay, I didn't know that. Really?
Yeah. For years, back in the early 80s and stuff like that, if you got the New Year's Thanksgiving Day, it was like really, really a big thing.
Okay.
Because everyone was home with their family.
Okay. And back then, there wasn't all the different TV channels, so it was like you had nothing else to watch, and the kids could stay up late.
Yeah.
All that. Okay.
So everybody was hoping to get that spot. And I looked at him, and I went, no. And he went, what do you mean, no? And I said, I'm not ready for it. And I knew in my mind I want to have three or four sets ready before I did my first one.
Okay.
So he said, what do you mean, no? I said, I can't do it. I'm not ready for it. And Jim Carrey wound up getting it that night.
Really?
Yeah, and that was Jim's first one. And Carson hated Carrey. Hated him.
Hated his act or just hated
him? Just hated him. I don't know if his act or he, when it was over, Carson just sort of like looked at him and went, okay, that's Jim something. Rather.
Really?
Yeah. I remember Jim really. It bugged him out for a long, long time.
So you knew Jim?
Oh, yeah. We used to work. Mitzi here used to have a club at the Dunes Hotel.
Okay.
And so she would, we would all work together and stuff like that. But I know Jim when he first came to New York. He came to New York and he had this manager. And he came from Montreal. He came down there. And this manager wanted to become an American citizen. So she would walk there. I was sitting at the bar, and this woman comes up. She says, "Are you married?" I go, "No." "Would you like to make $5,000? "What are you talking about?" "I'll marry you for a green card." It was like, "No." And then she would just turn to the next time and go, "Hi, are you married?" $5,000? "No. Hi, are you married?" You just go down the freaking bar.
Did any comic finally marry her?
No. Nobody married her. No.
Was she
the
cute?
Bar was... I don't know.
If she was hot, I bet the guy's big.
She's
right.
Doable, I guess. You know, yeah. We were comics.
Not for $5,000.
Yeah. You know. I remember when I was sitting at the Improv there watching television, and Monday Night Football was great. You sit there, we'd all hang out and watch. And one night I'm sitting there watching football, and I'm sitting next to this guy, and just him and I are watching. And Robin's on stage, and Robin's doing his time, blah, 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 doing like an hour. And me and this English guy are sitting there, and I'm explaining football to him, but nobody will come near me. And finally, when the game is over, like the game and Robin ended both at the exact same time. And the English guy goes, "Hey, how you doing?" And I said, "Okay, fine, nice talking to you." And off he goes. And my friend comes over to me, and I never recognized anybody. So he says, "You don't even know who you were talking to." I said, "No, who was it?" He said, "Bowie."
Really?
I said, "Oh, wow." I said, "That's pretty cool." So the next night, he was big fans of Stephen Wright. So next night, I catch
Bowie
a rising
was?
Star. Yeah.
Okay.
So next night, I went to catch a rising star, and there he's sitting there. And I said, "Hey, how come you didn't tell me who you were?" And he said, "Would it matter?" And I went, "No, I guess not."
That is so cool. But see, that's,
yeah.
That, he's probably, and it's funny because them, because they're so big, he's probably thinking, either this guy just is acting like he doesn't know me just because he wants to talk to me, or he's the stupidest guy in
the
world.
I was expecting to see, I thought Bowie was going to be like, you know, 7 foot tall
right.
or something like that. This guy was like 5'5", and it was like, you know, I was like, "Oh, wow." You know, no, it threw me off. No, it was. I tell you, we had such a blast. I hear Howie tells me stories. Howie Mandel tells me stories about out here in California in the 70s. Whoa!
Oh, sorry, we have to go to a quick break. I just shot on. We'll be right back.
And now, 92.5 The Y, radio that finally makes sense. For 10 years now, the Indie Bible has helped thousands of independent artists gain more exposure for their music. The 10th edition features 4,200 publications that will review independent music and 3,400 radio stations that will play independent songs. It also includes hundreds of labels, distributors, and digital download sites. Over 9,000 contacts in all. Included are 50 helpful articles written by music industry experts. The Indie Bible shows musicians where they can get their music reviewed, their songs played, and their CDs sold. For details and to order online, visit www.ndbible.com.
Are ye plagued by foreclosure? Well, here at Jim, Lad, and Matey, we can stop your foreclosure now. We're a mortgage rescue company, and for the small fee of everything you hold dear, we will negotiate with your lender on your behalf. Call Jim, Lad, and Matey at 1-800-YAR-YAR. That's 1-800-YAR-YARR.
If you're facing foreclosure, talk to the right people. Speak with HUD-approved housing counselors free of charge at 888-995-HOPE. Brought to you by NeighborWorks America and the Ad Council.
Looking for great deals on apparel? Visit OnlineSalesMart.com. Currently, we have authentic Armani designer sunglasses at $100 or more off original price. Novelty neckties of all types for under $10. Necktie sets at discounted prices. And high-quality and genuine leather dress shoes, wallets, handbags, briefcases, and more for less. Visit www.OnlineSalesMart.com. All major credit cards are accepted and all orders are shipped on the double. Once again, that's OnlineSalesMart.com.
The Ruger SR22 rifle, the coolest 22 LR ever. The SR22 rifle features the legendary and reliable Ruger rotary magazine and fires inexpensive 22 caliber ammunition with AR-style ergonomics. Built-in Picatinny rail, a precision-rifled cold hammer-forged barrel, and round mid-length handguard. The SR22 rifle, another innovative American-made product from Ruger. Learn more about the Ruger SR22 rifle at Ruger.com/SR22.
Because music fans deserve better. 92.5 KYHY. The Y.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Cooper Talk, people. You know, that was weird. I just sat there, and that's what we call a stop set. And I usually have my can. You know that one I always make fun of the music? Goes do-do-do-do-do-do. They have this thing. It sounds like some garage band. Mm-hmm. And it says, it's Cooper off the chain hook. It's Cooper Talk, baby. That's not me, because I would do it a lot different. You know that. Mm-hmm. But
sounds like
I was
a pimp.
Yeah, exactly. I was talking to John, and I was trying to figure out how to do the stop set, because it's just completely different. It's like It's like this video, this portable video player. It should be in the back of someone's car with a kid watching SpongeBob. Yeah. And I put it, and it just started. So I had to cut John off. We're going to hear about his Howie Mandel story in just 1 second. But I got to tell you, people, while I was talking, you're a wine drinker?
Love wine.
Okay, well, there's a place, people, and you know what? They sponsor me every week. It's a great place. It's right here in Burbank. They make their wine out of Santa Rosa, but down here it's called D'Argenzio Winery, and they're located right down there at 1204 West Burbank Boulevard. And if you guys are familiar with Burbank, that's like right across from the Costco where that little triangle all meets. And basically, they're a great place. And here's their hours. Put it this way: first of all, every day, Monday through Sunday, they have sales. They do wine sales because they bring the wine down. Mm-hmm. But they have tasting, and the wine tasting. I went down, and the owner Richie's great, and Annabelle, she's a sweetheart. She'll give it's free wine tasting. You can sample the wines, and their wine tastings are Friday from 5 to 8, Saturday from 2 to 8, and Sunday from 3 to 6. Mm. But on Thursdays, they have the great thing. It's called Wine Down Thursday. Wine Down Thursday.
Nice.
$5 a glass of wine, and they're nice. And it's a good wine. Mm-hmm. Good red. They have a lot of reds. They have some whites, but they have a lot of reds, and they have all the different food trucks coming up.
Is it from one vineyard or from several?
Well, the wine?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's all their own. It's their own wine. It's D'Argenzio wine.
Okay.
But then they have all these different food trucks, like the biggest food trucks, like Grill 'em and all those things.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
So people hang out. In the back of the wine tasting room, there's a little guitarist, and there's like, it's light. It's really nice. It's really romantic.
Where is it?
It's right there in Burbank. It's on 1204 West Burbank Boulevard.
Well, I got to do that.
Check it out. And call people. Call 818-846-VINO. That's 8466. And check out their website. The big wine they're selling now, and it gets more popular towards his birthday, is Ozzy Osbourne's guitarist Randy Rhoads died years ago. Well, it turns out that the owner's wife, one of the owners, because there's twin brothers who own it, her brother was Randy Rhoads. So they have a select Randy Rhoads vintage Cabernet, which I heard is awesome. And
that's cool.
So buy it, and maybe you'll see John Mendoza down there.
I like that.
And I'll just walk around the stop set, and I'll cut him off. And also, people, check me out at Cooper Talk on either Twitter or Facebook. Follow me on Twitter, / Cooper Talk. Also, this Saturday, as I said, this Saturday, I'll be at 9:30 at the Flappers, right there in the Yoohoo Room. Come dressed in a Halloween costume or say Cooper Talk, you get in free. Sunday, if you want to say hi, I'm just going to be drinking on my birthday down at the Volcano. My Philadelphia Eagles are playing at 5 o'clock against the Cowboys. I'm going to get a cheesesteak, and I'm going over at 5 o'clock.
Oh, please beat them.
Oh, I know. I hate the Cowboys.
I'm a Giant fan.
See, it's funny. You're a Giant fan. Mm-hmm. It's always funny. When you get, a lot of my roommates in college were Giants fans. If people don't know, here's how the NFC East breaks up. Everyone hates the Cowboys. No one takes the Redskins seriously anymore.
You're right.
And then the Giants fan, we tolerate them, but it's not like a hate. Like I have a friend named Sadiq.
I love seeing the Philly Giant game. They're great. Yeah.
Well, I remember I have a friend Sadiq. That's funny. I always give him crap. I go, and he's an Indian, and he owns a 7-Eleven. I always give him crap. I go, great. Living to the stereotype. He's like, no, you didn't, Cooper. But we used to hang out and watch the games, and I had my Eagles jersey, and he'd have his Giants jersey. Now, when the Eagles played the Giants, we'd sit together. But when they didn't, we used to go to the Black Angus here in Burbank. Okay. We would sit at other ends of the bar because we each have our own TV, and they put the sound on low so we watch it. But I remember when the Eagles came back last year with the DeSean Jackson thing, the whole time, and I'm not one of those people that rubs it in. He's getting so smug. He's like, whatever your record was at the time, he's like, 10-6, baby, 10-6. He's like, playoffs, baby, playoffs. And I'm sitting there, and I'm about to leave. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, because you get so pissed off. You know how it is, especially when it's against the Giants. And I'm like, I told the bartender, I'm like, screw this, man. Just let me settle my tab. I'm getting out of here. I can't take this crap. I'm getting out of here. Give me my damn tab. And then the Eagles score.
Horrible.
I go, all right. And then I'm sitting there going, okay, all right. And then I'm sitting there going, okay. And I see him, and he's going, oh, crap. And then when they kick.
You don't kick off to him.
Yeah, and I think they thought someone got murdered in the bar because they're like, all the servers are like, oh my God, what happened? Because I was like, ah, it was. Well, I remember watching the Miracle of the Meadowlands. I remember watching it as a kid with Pisarcik.
That was the worst game of all time. I was a Giant fan.
Yeah, I was sitting there as a little kid. And back then, it's not like now there's all these different replays. And I was going, it's over. The season's over. I'm as a little kid, I was like, you're almost in tears because I loved it so much. And then, I mean, And the weird thing is later he became an Eagle.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I was watching this. I thought about that Saturday night. I was watching some football game, and it was like 5 seconds, 30 seconds left to go in the game. And the guy, you knew they were going to take a knee. And the guy went into a shotgun, and I was like, "Are you freaking kidding me? You just grab the ball and duck and dive."
Yeah, it's so funny how it's like, you take the knee and you have everyone around you.
Yeah,
but they don't do that anymore.
No, they don't. But to watch, you know, you're the thing that's very upsetting is you're the only game left against the Cowboys. Cowboys can actually make the freaking playoffs this year.
We have the Cowboys twice.
Do you play it twice?
And you play them twice. Giants play them twice. The Redskins play them twice. No, division they play twice. So you guys.
I thought there was the rest of their schedule is really, really, really easy.
Did the Giants already play the Cowboys?
Yeah, they played them once. Yeah.
And who won?
Yeah. I think the Giants.
No, because yeah, Cowboys. Are like, yeah. I mean, the Giants are like 4-2.
No, I think the Cowboys won.
Really?
Game. Yeah. For some reason, I think the Cowboys, because I got a friend that's a Cowboy fan, and I just hate him.
I don't know why. It's just like just in America's team, and it's like, and you see all these Cowboy fans out here, and you're like, what the hell? Why? You're from L.A.
Yeah.
What are you a Cowboy fan for? You grew up here, really? I can see people in Dallas, and it's like, but that would suck, because now the Mavericks won the championship, and the Rangers might win the World Series. Texas can't be title town. I'm sorry. That would just piss me off.
That, you know, I see your point, but I'm okay with the Rangers, and I'm not a Laker fan, so for me to watch Dallas beat the Lakers, I was very happy with
I became a Laker fan a few years ago when they sort of sucked. Like, they had an offseason, and I said, you know what, I like the Sixers, but I don't even like basketball. Mm-hmm. I'm a Sixers fan, but I'm like, it just sucks watching the Sixers, because they're never on TV, because they sucked.
Yeah.
And I liked them when they lost to the Lakers in the championship. It was fine with me, because they won one game. But I remember I became a Lakers fan, because one year, and I still have these bobbleheads. I went and bought the bobbleheads from Carl's Jr.
Oh, I got those.
And the way, I have the crappy ones. You probably have the Malone ones. I have Chris Mim, Caron Butler, Luke Walton. I have a Chris Mim bobblehead. Who the hell has a Chris Mim? And I have an Odom and a Bryant. But I mean, Chris Mim, Luke Walton.
Oh, you got a Bryant? I didn't get a Bryant. I didn't know Bryant gave his away. Yeah, I've got the guys that got drafted and didn't get to play.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Chris Mim, like the guy paid him millions. Now, have you always been a big sports fan?
I love sports, yeah. Yeah. I grew up 9 blocks from Yankee Stadium.
Okay.
So I had a great childhood.
Big Yankee. Who were some of your love, like, what Yankees did you love growing up?
Oh, I grew up in the heyday. I grew up with, you know, Mantle and Whitey Ford.
I got to see
all of that.
That must have been amazing. Cause, I mean, for me, like being a Philly fan, I was lucky when I was a kid to see Mike Schmidt time.
Oh, yeah.
But for a Yankees fan, but the Yankees is funny. I have a good friend, which you'll love this if you're a Yankees fan. My friend Stuart Rosenthal, I went to college with him. Huge Yankees
fan. What school did you go to?
I went to a small school in New Jersey called Richard Stockton State.
Okay.
And it's a very, you know, it was small. It was in the middle of Pine Barrens. Very good. People just, you know, it was in the time of decadence. So
sure.
It was a good year, good 4 years away in college. But Stuart's a huge, huge Yankees fan.
Mm-hmm.
And now, have you ever seen a no-hitter?
Yes, I've seen no-hitters in a perfect game, yes.
Who did you say?
I forget who the no-hitter was, but I saw the one on the 4th of July that Guidry pitched.
Okay, well, this guy, he sits there, he sees Jim Abbott, who had a no-hitter.
Right.
And then he was going, he's going to go down to the Jersey Shore.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a house, but it was a cloudy weekend, it was like Memorial Day or whatever, and they said, you know what, screw it, let's just go to the ball game, the stadium will be empty. And I think it was the day Doc Gooden threw the no-hitter.
Okay.
But I'm like, just what a jerk. Randomly, he goes to a game and gets to see a no-hitter. I mean, I've seen a one-hitter.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah. I was, when I first moved out here, I was, a friend of mine called me up. It was like the sixth inning or something like that, and the Dodger was pitching a perfect game.
Okay.
And he said, you want to go to the Dodger game and see if we can get in there and just watch the end of the game? Yeah, sure. And as we were driving in, thousands of people were pulling out. And that from that day on, I could never be a Dodger fan. The fact that a perfect game is going on, and you're freaking leaving?
Yeah, that's,
no!
Yeah, that's like I was at a playoff game against the Cardinals, and when the Dodgers always get beat by the Cardinals. But it was Jose Lima, who's I think, passed away. Is it him or Jose Mesa? Jose Lima passed away, I think. But the guy's pitching. It's a playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
He's pitching a game of his career. He's pitching a complete game. He's at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing like guys leaving with their kids. And it's like, oh, my God, you're taking your kid where you can see a complete in the seventh inning.
Yeah.
You're going to see this guy who's pitching the game of his life. You're nuts.
Yeah.
Do
you know the Reggie Jackson three home run was 25 years ago?
Wow! No, you know, okay. Were you sure?
Yeah, because the other night when Pujols hit the three home runs, they said it was 25 years. It was 77 or something like that.
I don't know, because I heard today on the sports thing that 25 years ago today was the Buckner era.
I saw that. Did you see the two of them on Channel 2 News this morning?
No.
They're Mookie. The both of them together.
Really? Did you see the Curb Your Enthusiasm with Buckner?
That was great.
It was classic.
That was really
good.
It was
so funny.
Was really
like,
good.
Hey, Buckner, you suck. Yeah. Now, you were... Okay, well, you probably don't like the Mets.
But you hate Boston.
As a Yankee fan, you hate Boston.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. I love going to Fenway.
I heard it's great. I heard it's the coolest park.
It's so freaking cool. The whole area there, the whole flavor, the people there. I mean, I hate Red Sox fans, but I do love going to Fenway.
See, that's funny. So how many different fans are different? You know, it's like I think Phillies and Yankees fans get along together.
Yeah,
it's because we play each other. We're cool.
Yeah.
But it's like as a Red Sox, you got to hate Red Sox. I hate Mets fans. I hate Braves fans the most.
Yeah.
Because Atlanta Braves always owned us when we were years ago.
Yeah. But Red Sox fans are always like, they almost like have short man disease. You know, they're always like, hey, yeah, we're just as good as you. No, you're not. You got two freaking World Series.
And they're
lifetime.
Myopic. They're always like, hey, what do you mean? That's not foul.
Yeah.
What do you mean it's not foul? It went into the stands.
Yes.
Okay, it's foul. Believe me. So see that people. You get two comics who love sports, and we get a thing. But I gotta say, you mentioned Howie Mandel.
Right.
What's funny about that is I actually saw you. I was doing a sales. I was in a sales event, special events marketing manager for Gordon Biersch, and it's a national chain. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have like 25 restaurants, and I was named one of the top three. So we got to go to Vegas, and one of our events was a comedy show. And I think you guys were at the MGM Grand. I think Howie was there, and I was like, because you always wonder who the opening act is, and you came in, and I was like, cool. I said, I know this guy's act. Mm-hmm. I hope he does a joke about the fat guy finding food. So how long did you tour? Did you know Howie before, or how did?
No, we met at Starbucks. I was at Starbucks out in the valley, and I'm standing there in line. All of a sudden, a guy walks up behind me and goes, "Hey, John, how you doing?" And I turn around, "Hey, Howie, how are you?"
Had you met before or no?
Never, ever. And the funny thing was, I told you I did Saturday Night Live over in London. It was called Friday Night Live. And the week
was that just a stand-up show? Or
No. It was their version
of
Saturday Night Live, but it was over there. Ben Elton was the host and stuff like that. And so they gave me a version of the comic the week before. It was Howie. And when I did the HBO Young Comedian special, they had a guy host. They had Montreal, one from Montreal, one from New York, one from San Francisco, one from Chicago, and Ellen was the one from, I think, Los Angeles.
Okay.
And so Howie introduced someone from Canada, and Richard Belzer introduced me.
Okay.
So we had done, a ton of different things, like walking in one door, walking out the other door situation. And now here we were at Starbucks, and we sat down, and we started talking, and we were hanging out, and then one time it was Thanksgiving. The opening act that he had was going to go do a cruise, and he said to me, "What are you doing this weekend?" I said, "Nothing." He said, "You want to come to Vegas and open for me?" I said, "Yeah, sure." So that was 9 years ago.
Really? Now, do you still up for him?
Yeah. This weekend we're at the Venetian.
Oh, so you're going to, how often do you go to Vegas?
This is the first time in 2 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know. Did they get pissed that Howie left, the MGM to go to the Venetian? I mean, is it like...
It's been 2 years. No. Well, what happened was you four-wall the place. And I think what happened was it just became so expensive that it didn't pay after all. And the economy started dying.
What is four-wall? What does that mean?
Four-wall is where you rent the room out.
Okay.
So you rent the room out, and then you pay for your own advertising. You pay for your own... you have to pay for the union people. And the union people will come back there. And you saw the show. It's just me, Howie, a mic, and a chair. Okay,
right. So and maybe a water to put the chair.
Right. So the union people would get there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon to set up. 11 of them. 11 of them to set up for two guys, a stool, and a water.
Really?
And that was it. And they'd stay there until 11:30 at night. So they would get there 7 hours in or whatever the heck it was. And you got to pay those freaking people. So it just became so financially ridiculous that he just went, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. If the guys come in and work, and he's a really, really great guy. He didn't want to begrudge the fact that, but it just found it, you're putting your hand too far into my pocket at this point.
Right, yeah. I mean, I never knew that they... Not do all the places work like that in Vegas?
No, not all, but a lot do.
But I guess, and plus when you become a bigger name like Howie, I guess if the rates are good, then you're making out
better.
Instead of them saying we're paying you this,
yeah,
So okay, that's I didn't do that. So so how long you did that for him? I mean, how often were you going to Vegas?
Oh, we were there. We could be there sometimes 2 weeks out of a month. Sometimes we do a whole month
every night or just
every night. Yeah.
Oh, you never had, we never went dark.
No, we never go dark.
But only one show or two or
one show a night. We do like a 9 o'clock show or something like that, and it was, you know. Two weeks in Vegas will knock you out.
I lived in Vegas for like a year, and it was when it's just very culturally shallow.
Yeah,
I mean when your idea of you know, theater is Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah,
you know, it's like
we would wind up at nighttime in you know in Duane Reade's, you know looking at the lotion and magazines. We would literally get so bored at nighttime we would walk from the MGM to the Stratosphere and back.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, we'd finish the show at, like, you know, 11 o'clock at night, and then we'd walk all the way to the Stratosphere and all the way back again just to have something to do. Or go to the gym and just bounce around.
Now, would people recognize him when he was walking down the street?
Oh, sure. Like, he's one of the most recognizable guys, no matter where you go. You know, people, Howie, you know, he's a great guy. He's good to have as a friend. You'd be very lucky to have a friend like him.
So now you're playing the Venetian this weekend.
Venetian, Friday and Saturday.
Friday and Saturday.
28th and 29th. Yeah.
So where have you been lately? I mean, no, opening with him, or are you doing your own stuff? Or you like Sunday, you said last Sunday you were in down.
We were down at San Diego. We did.
That was with Howie.
Yeah, it was with Howie. And the week before, I don't know where we were the week before. Detroit. We were in Detroit doing Caesars out there. And we did a week in Toronto, all around Toronto area, and stuff like that. So yeah, we stay busy. I think with Riverside or something like that, a lot of casinos, a ton and tons and tons of casinos.
See, and they're opening up everywhere. It's funny because I grew up outside Philadelphia, New Jersey, in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. But now there's like a casino in Philadelphia, and my parents moved to Dover, Delaware, and there's a huge casino.
Sure.
And it's a casino and a racetrack, and that's Dover.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like it's crazy.
But you go into these places down south. You go in, and you know, like in Mobile, Alabama, and you drive through these, you know, these refinery areas and stuff like that, and there's all these lights and stuff like that, and you pull into this massive freaking casino, and you pull into like a town that's got like 10 casinos there, and you just look at the people, you know, and you go, man, who's paying? You know, it just bugs me. It bugs me because you walk in there, and there was a casino out here, out in towards in Riverside or something like that, and I walked down, I came down the escalator, and there were two Mexican guys with leaf blowers between their legs. So I went over, and he spoke English, and I said to him, I said, why do you have your leaf blower? And he said, because if they keep it in the truck, someone will steal it. And here they are playing nickel slots, just with their leaf blowers next to their ankles.
Really?
And going at it. Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, it's funny, and it's like some of the India casinos, they charge you for drinks.
Yeah,
it's like you know, in Vegas, you sit there, and everyone goes, yeah, they you know, the cocktail services sucks. I'm like, well, usually I said, just so you know, guys, if you're playing the nickel slots, they're not going to be running to get you. But what I would always do is I'd say, hey, I'd be nice to the waitress, and I'd say, you know, by the way, I know you're busy, but you know, I give like a $5 tip. I said, can I get, you know, just get like two rounds? She said, she can do it, but they'll do it. You know, they'll bring you two drinks.
Some will, but you'll get it. You know, like at Riviera Hotel, they laid off. They had a major cutback there, so they got rid of all the people that wanted a job. And
right.
They just kept the people that didn't want a job. And I remember I was standing there, and the bartender's like in front of me, like you. And I said to the guy, can I get a Heineken? He says, the Heinekens are over there. I said, what's that mean? He says, I'm not going to walk all the way over there. I said, you're not going to walk all the way over? You're not going to walk 7 feet to get me a freaking Heineken, you lazy bastard?
That's funny. No, what I heard was, though, from somebody who lived in Vegas is some of these guys have been there for so long, and they're so with the union. Even if they stirred your drink with their cock, they wouldn't get fired.
They wouldn't get fired.
They go, well, you know, go to the infirmary and just make sure you didn't get anyone sick.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just because, and they're making like $20 an hour, and then tips above it. So they're like, yeah, we don't need tips.
They don't need, you know. And you know, at this point in the game, the waitresses that are left over look like us.
Right, right.
You know?
Well, that's always funny because I don't know if I was talking about, I think I was talking about this last week. There's a Camden, New Jersey, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Okay, it's the number one. Well, this year they don't make the top 10, but last year they make the number one violent crime, number one city.
Okay.
And so I'm reading an article about it, and because Camden, you know, they tried to renovate it and it just didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, and it basically said, well, the problem that the people are having is that the city made a lot of cutbacks. So with the police force. They cut. They got rid of half of the police. So you do that. Mm-hmm. And the ones who stay were the guys who were tenured, who were like 45. So they got rid of all the young guys who come out and can actually chase the criminals for a bunch of 45-year-olds. And they're like, you wonder why your crime rate's up.
Yeah, the 45-year-olds, they don't even put bullets in their guns anymore. They don't care. You know, they're just trying to get to 50 so they can move down to, you know, Hollywood, Florida. Oh.
Your jokes are, you're mostly one-liners.
Yeah.
Now, how did you pick that as your style? I mean, and did you ever sit there and go, somebody, I guess, like for me, I said, you know, I wasn't me on stage, and I couldn't do it. I mean, how do you, you've been doing it for a long time, and you're very successful. I always think, when you do one-liners, the only thing that sucks is, you have to remember so much damn crap. If you do the 45-minute set, how many jokes do you think you would tell?
I remember I was doing a Showtime special, and someone actually counted, and it was like, It was a few hundred.
I mean, that's a lot of stuff to remember.
To do a Tonight Show spot was. I remember Rita Rutner. She would do 22 jokes for a Tonight Show spot.
That's 7-minute spot, right?
A 5-minute spot. Yeah.
Oh, so it's
5 to 6-minute spots. Depends. You would always cheat, and you would do 5 minutes instead of the full 6 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. They didn't care. They, you know, you just talk slower. There was one Tonight Show spot. I actually did 15 jokes. It was, I just, between the laughs and stuff like that, and I remember sitting down and Fred the Corvette says, you know, John, you could have done 2. And I went, well, thank you very much. You know, which made it into on the Best of Carson. That set is on the Best of Carson.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So is your stuff on, with your permission, on YouTube, or where can people who, you know, because I have some younger listeners.
There's a couple. I'm lazy about that. Then you actually have to figure stuff out, and you have to cut it, and you have to put it in. It's like, you know what? No.
Now, do you have a website?
No.
You know, so you're just like the hell with it.
No, I've made a lot of bad mistakes.
You're on iTunes?
No.
No. You're on Facebook, though.
My daughter signed me up on Facebook. I go on it about...
That's how I got in touch with you, though. I sent you a message through Facebook.
Yeah. I go on Facebook to do two things. One, to check up on a few friends and stuff like that. And then two, to annoy a friend or two.
Okay.
You know, just to see... I've eliminated most of my political people that come on in every day of this and that, you know, Obama's the greatest thing, or Obama sucks. Or,
right.
I don't give a fuck.
But
I do care enough to piss them off.
Okay. So what would you do if someone was... Well, I mean, did you just sit there and make something that you know is going to get their...
Oh, yeah, get their blood right through the ceiling. And like Cowboy fans. I got friends that are Cowboy fans. I'll go after them, and I'll just really pick and go, I wonder how Romo's going to fuck up today.
Right.
You know, and sure as shit, he will.
See,
you know?
It's funny. I get that when the Phillies lost to the... it didn't make a difference, because, you know, when you're a lone Philly fan at a bar, you go to watch the game of Dodger fans, you know, and they were doing great. And, of course, like any fan, you get a little... It's like a Yankee fan. We're going to get cocky. Look at our record. Oh, yeah, our fans are awful, but they don't beat someone to death in the parking lot. And as soon as the Phillies lost, and I stayed at home, I said, I'm not going out because I'm not dealing with the crap just in case they lose.
Yeah.
And I'm not
going
to go out because I'm not going to be like, yeah, if they won.
Yeah.
So I sit at home, I'm on my couch watching the game. They lose. Next thing you know, a few texts. Well, my one buddy was like, yeah, sorry about that, man. You know, that's
sure.
Cool. But then two guys I know, first of all, who aren't comics. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, okay, first of all, don't deal with an angry comic.
No.
Okay, because did this, and I just went back, yeah, nice hitting. I said, yeah, who's your man? Ethier, next year is in the Phillies. Go screw yourself. And the other guy's like, oh, I thought they were a great team. I said, yeah, at least our fans love our owner. We don't beat that people to death. And then they're like, calm down. No, you started.
Right,
you started. I'm not going to sit there. I don't sit there. I mean, my one friend was a Cowboy fan. I don't sit there and go, yeah, Cowboys look, unless it's against the Eagles. But then, you know, that's like this Sunday.
No, but there are ways to do it, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, how do you do it?
Well, I actually, a couple of weeks ago, I had a friend, and when the Cowboys lost to the Patriots.
What a great game.
Yes, well, great game.
Don't give Brady the ball. Brady's amazing. Even though if you hate New England, Brady's just amazing.
Amazing play. And so I did a setup, and I knew my friend would bite on it. And I wrote, I said, gee, the Cowboys looked really good today. And he wrote back and he went, yeah, but they didn't look good enough. And I went, because they're the Cowboys.
See, that's perfect. That's perfect.
You know they're going to walk in. They can't pass it up. They don't get it.
Yeah, they don't. It's so funny. But by the way, people, remember, this Sunday, come down to Waukano. It's on the corner of... what is it on the corner of Angelino and San Fernando. 5 o'clock. I'll probably be in the back bar celebrating my birthday. Eagles, Cowboys. I'll either have the Cooper Eagles jersey on or the Westbrook Eagles jersey on. I'm not sure which one, but come up and say hi. And if you're a Cowboys fan, don't even come up. Don't even come out because I hate them. I just, it's so funny. I just, football, it's weird because there's like one guy who's a big Eagles fan. I see him driving around every once in a while. And he's got, I mean, he's a little too, like, some fans are just too fanatical. Yes. Like he has like a Bronco and it's got like Eagles stuff painted on it. Yeah. And then my buddy sees him at Pavilions and he goes, yeah, I just saw that Eagles guy. And he's got like a big Eagles tat. And I'm like, really? I mean, come on. I mean, I love the team, but I'm not going to sit there with a tattoo on my arm.
No.
And not like a little eagle, like the whole arm. It's like, what do you have, pictures of Wilbert Montgomery?
Ha.
I mean, what, it's like, come on, are you serious?
I got shit from my daughter and my friends back east because one of the girls that was on Deal or No Deal married one of the pitchers on the Red Sox. So we were working up in Boston, so we went to the game. We went into the locker rooms. I took pictures in the locker room.
Right, right.
Gave me a hat. You know, you're in the locker room. You got to put the freaking hat on.
I know.
You're,
it must
you
be
know,
like...
Oh, it hurt, but, you know, I did it. And I figured, you know what? This will annoy a couple of people, so I'll have fun there. And I put it on myself, and my friend's going, fuck you. How dare you put that... You know, how dare you go in? It's like, you know what? I'm okay with it.
Yeah, exactly. Something you have to do with. Yeah. So wait, your daughter is a Deal for No Deal girl?
No, no, no. One of the girls is number 26. I forget her name right now. She was she married Buchholz.
Okay.
Yeah. So Howie and I were working. Boston.
Okay. So
So we went and they brought us back into the dressing room.
I'm going to tell you one thing about that Deal or No Deal. I've tried to watch it. I just don't understand it. Everyone, like, I'm mathematically really good. I just cannot think. And people are like,
it's very simple.
That's the, no, I'm sitting there,
it's greed.
I must overthink it. I'm like, I don't. And so you get this, and they're like, Cooper, I can ask you what the 87 times 63 is, and you can say it like that, but you can't figure this damn game out. I'm like, I don't understand it. It's like there's an old joke that I never got, and you probably heard it, and you probably laugh at it, and someone had to explain it, and I get most jokes.
Sure.
When that guy says, oh, a skeleton walks into a bar and says, give me a beer and a mop.
And a mop.
I didn't get it. I didn't
We all have jokes like that. We all have jokes that make you go, I'll tell you what, I actually wrote a joke that I didn't get. I tell you about bad jokes or something. I had a joke that would never get a laugh. Ever, 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 ever get a laugh. And I would pull it out once a year, just as a goof, just a goof.
Right.
Like that. And you would hear like maybe one comic in the background, ha, you know, one of those.
Right.
So one night I'm on Letterman and I'm doing the show and I could have read the phone book this night. It was just every joke was killing. And I went, you know what? I'm going to pull that joke out. And I pulled that joke out. Nothing.
Well, that's a joke.
Okay, let me finish. So I sit down on the panel, and David says to me, he says, what happened in the middle there? I said, that joke never worked. He said, you decided to do it now? And that's what I was doing so well. I thought it would work, and I'd get it out of my system. He says, well, you were wrong. And I went, apparently. And the joke was, I used to be a shepherd. But I lost my job because I kept falling asleep during inventory.
Okay, I get that, because the sheep. That's
right, 1, 2, 3, right. Boom.
And no one got that?
I think they think I was fucking the sheep.
Oh, man. That's
so their minds went that way, and I was going this way.
It's actually funny. It's like a joke someone told me that no one ever gets, and you'll probably get because you're smart. Why do mice have small balls? Because only 2% of them dance.
Ah,
see, I get that. Someone told me, a lot of people go, I don't get it. I'm like, it's younger people, because their little ball is a dance
or
whatever.
Yes.
It's crazy. Anyway, you know, we have like 2.5 minutes. We got see, time flies by.
This was wonderful.
I'm glad you came on. Now, you're in the Venetian this weekend.
This weekend.
Okay, and now, do you have any Southern California appearances coming up?
No, not at all. None.
That was last week.
That was the closest I got. San Diego. I think I want to write a whole bunch of new material, and I've got a whole bunch of stuff that I want to get out. So I might start going over either like the Ice House or the Improv.
So you hit those? Sometimes hit those clubs.
I haven't done them in years, but I've been putting all of this stuff together, and nothing really matches with anything.
Right. Okay.
So it's time for me to figure out how to make what work.
The Ice House, man, is like a little. That is, you know, put it this way: if you're a comic and you can't do good in that room.
Go home.
It's honestly one of the coolest rooms. I mean, I've done a few nights on Sunday nights there, and oh my, you just go on stage and it's like, and they always put me, it's like this one book some of her students and whatever, but they always put me up early because I have energy and I know what I'm doing, and I sit there and I just go, wow. I'm like, if I had gone like seventh, but you get them like that. Once, and they're cool and they're hip and they're not jerks.
And the people that run it are great. Jan is great. It's really, really, really great.
It's always a great time.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah.
And people, now remember, this week I didn't write the article, but every other week, pick up the Toluca Times. Cooper Talk is in there. My do a little ranting and raving. That's my article. I didn't do it this week because I was busy. But every I just submit that's to him every once in a while. Yeah, I sent the guy a letter. I said, can I do it? He goes, yeah. I said, why not? So look at that. Remember, I have some old episodes on. Go to iTunes, type in Cooper Talk, just one word. Because if you do two words, Anderson Cooper comes up, and it's all screwed up. So Cooper Talk, one word. This Saturday, people, this Saturday, come out. Flappers, 9:30, Yoohoo Room. It's the Boardwalk Saturday Show. Put on by my friend Duke Kerperlani. I'll be doing an extended set, and 9:30, wear a costume, you're getting free. Say Cooper Talk, you're getting free. Come up and say hi to me. Every Tuesday, I host Bar Bingo at Jake's in Pasadena. Come out then, it's fun. I hosted the kids get into it. I have it hooked up to the laptop. We do a bingo game, and if they win, they can do a minute to win it type game. So I just sit there and I just mess with the people. I always pick out, like, and there's all these young kids and they get into it.
What a blast.
And it's sometimes, I mean, they start turning on me. I have these three Latino guys and like, we never win. They're joking, like, you're a racist. It should be called gringo, not bingo. And I'm like, guys, I don't do it.
I'm not the racist. You're the one yelling racist.
Exactly, actually. Anyway, guys, thank you so much, John, for coming
on. Thank you. This was fun.
People, come out Sunday. It's my birthday. I'll be down there at Volcano. I want to thank you all for listening to the Cooper Talk. If you want any guests, write me a Cooper at 925KYHY.com. That's Cooper at 925KYHY.com. Have a great Halloween weekend. Don't drink and drive. And remember, I'm Steve Cooper. I'm only as hip as my guest. You guys have a wonderful, wonderful night.